From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 31. This week, we jump back into Bone Valley, but this time for Season 5, and we heard Bob's conversation with host of Season 5, Paul Solotaroff. Bob's conversation with Paul was an absolutely phenomenal one, and today we are sans Janet, but Bob and I are going to have a great conversation about this amazing case. But I do want to take a quick second and add a trigger warning to today's episode. This case involves sexual violence against minors, so just be warned. But before we get into this week's episode, we do have a question about last week's housekeeping. And it comes from Chantel. The question is, last week you said, with the new case, we're going to be recording a few weeks ahead of time. My question, how will that be in real-time investigating? Will you be putting up all the evidence at once, or will it be for each episode?
Okay, yeah, good question. So as far as like, how will it be in real-time? I touched on this last week, but the real-time element will come in through our follow-ups. So we'll be leaning, the follow-ups are where I get the feedback from you on each element. So in the way this could, I could just still do it like this and just not tell you guys, and you wouldn't know the difference, because I'm still gonna produce them in the same way, which means I'm gonna be taking an element of the case, I'm gonna discuss that element of the case, I'll put out the case files for that episode. And then we'll take the follow-up, we'll get your guys' thoughts, theories, questions about it in real time in the follow-up, and we'll go from piece to piece to piece as we move along. So as far as like how will everything be put on the website, just like it always has been. And there is a reason for that. One of the reasons that we have been so successful in helping like the attorneys that we work for and things, or that we work with, do these cases is because not only are we putting all these extra eyes on the case, but the way I go through it one piece at a time, it doesn't allow you to lose the forest for the trees. So, you know, we've taken, you know, all the tens of thousands of people that are listening to the episode, we're talking about one specific element, and all those people are focused on all of the case material for that specific element of the case for that whole week. And you can't get distracted by all the other things that are out there because we haven't gotten to those yet. Because what happens a lot of times with, you know, investigators when things go wrong is because, you know, they especially like, you know, how many times have we heard of, you know, like Susan Simpson and Proof has been talking about in Kalamazoo, their cold case unit, where like cold case units where we'll find all these problems. A cold case unit takes an old case where it's already been fully investigated. So they got this huge murder book, the huge investigative file, and they sit down and they go through the whole file and they're looking at every, so they're not focusing in. You know, they're not always able to focus in one specific element at a time. And it's easy to miss stuff or misinterpret things when you're looking at it all at one time. Our process is to take it piece by piece by piece. So it won't be real time in the way that, for me, I'm not starting to research and write an episode on Monday to be released on Sunday. I will be doing that ahead of time. As far as for you guys as listeners, you guys are still going to get it just the same way. You're going to get a piece of the case, all the materials for that. We're going to discuss that week and then move on to the next piece. Now, the way that the real-time episodes will come into play is I'll have, like, say I go through this case and I figure out, okay, here are 8 to 12 or 16, whatever it is, episodes worth of, you know, different elements that I want to cover. And so I'll write those and record them and produce them and get them all ready to go. Then where you guys come in is you guys find the stuff that I missed, right? And so we will do one of two things. If they, you know, once we get through all that, ideally you as the listeners will have developed new leads as we move through the process, which is what usually happens. And when that happens, then once we get to, if you pay attention to all of our old previous seasons, there's kind of phases, right? So we start off kind of just telling you like the story as the jury heard it and understood it. Then we start digging and we investigate the investigation, which will primarily be what I'll be pre-producing. So I will, you know, go through all the different elements of the investigation. We'll start developing new leads, figuring out where the flaws are, where the problems are along the way. And then the third phase, which is where we have gotten tripped up these last few times because there's attorneys involved and they're, you know, actively litigating, is then we move on to the new investigation based on the stuff that we've uncovered. We have new leads, new people to talk to, and then we move on. That part of it, that phase, even in this new model, will still be happening in real time. Maybe a little delayed because you guys may send me something when episode 3 is airing and we're like, well, hey, I found this, this, and this. Well, then for me now, I still have, you know, there might still be 6 more episodes going to air, but while those are going out, I'm able to find those people, interview those people, chase down those leads that you guys are developing to come back around. And then if there's something like groundbreaking, there's no reason that I can't, you know, say we're on episode 5 and you guys find something groundbreaking for me, instead of publishing episode 6 next week, we'll just push it back and put a new episode in between there. So it'll still be flexible and dynamic from my end, where if there's something significant that's coming out, I can adjust the schedule, or we can take the stuff, the information we find along the way, and start putting it on the end in more of a real time as we finish things out. It'll just depend on how things play out. The key is for me that, you know, right now it's the way the seasons go is I produce episode 5 and then we do the follow-up. And then on Friday during the follow-up, or Tuesdays or Wednesdays when we're recording the follow-up, you guys give me new information. And then now I've got 2 days to like chase this down and get a new episode done. And this way, the next episode will already be done, so I can dedicate time to working on that thing. So I think that it's going to be a little different, but I think that it'll be far more effective. And I don't really think as a listener, so many of our listeners are so actively engaged in what we're doing that I don't think that you'll notice much of a difference in it, because I'm not going to take, if there's something big and groundbreaking that we can put out, I'm not going to like sit there and wait till the end of the season. We'll put it out when it comes out. That'll just be the episode that probably isn't going to be as produced to the same level as the ones that are done ahead of time. So hopefully that answers your question. Good question, Chantel. Yeah, and I'm starting to get those materials in for that case now. So I'm still waiting on trial transcripts, which will be coming hopefully sometime this week. Other housekeeping, I can't really talk much about it, but I am excited that I'm able to, you know, with the Chris Bynum case, we kind of had to stop because the case is being actively litigated and we don't want to be talking about stuff on the podcast. Now I'm hopefully just days away from getting my Indiana PI license. I'm in like the final stages of them approving it. And it looks like I'm going to be able to be involved, continue to be involved in that case, all the different things, the leads and stuff we've developed, but not, you know, it won't be on the podcast, but I'm hoping to continue working on that case as a defense investigator officially to continue moving that one forward. So just so you guys know, all these cases that we have, you know, once we start talking about them on the podcast, you know, that usually doesn't mean that I'm done with the case. It just means, you know, we're at a stage where I can't talk about what's going on anymore.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think this is going to be a phenomenal new process for you. And especially with that, I mean, it's going to be good news.
And real quick before we move on, Sarah in our live chat just made a comment. She was just kind of just catching up with our conversation about the new season. She just basically just says that she's curious how things are going to go, because so many times in the past, listeners will have new ideas or pushback on something and it'll cause me to like re-examine stuff. Now she says, I wonder if you'll end up redoing some episodes after listener comments and ideas. I think that's entirely possible that'll happen. And just so you guys know that, you know, in regards to that, you know, I will be open for that. The idea is that I've got like the basic story at least put together throughout the, you know, those several episodes. But yeah, I mean, I'll be actively engaging with all of you, both through the follow-ups and on the fan page and stuff as we go. So if there's new stuff that's coming up, because it's very possible that you guys might find something after episode 3 that null and voids what I was going to talk about in episode 7. And if that's the case, then we'll address that when we get there. Smash has any idea when you'll be able to share more about the project you were filming? Soon, I hope. Very, very soon. That's all I can tell you. It should be like I'm hoping like within a month, I'm hoping that I'll be able to do that. Yes.
Fingers crossed.
And I guess while we're still on the kind of housekeeping thing, just so you guys know, we are, and I think I'll go ahead and put it out at least live for our patrons. So I guess you have to be listening to this live to know that it's coming. But I am talking to Kevin and Anya one more time tomorrow, which is Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern time. And we are finally having our discussion about the Delphi case that we've been talking about for a year almost. So they're coming on to talk about that one. That should be a really interesting conversation because unlike the Temujin Kenzu case, where I'm not super familiar with it and don't have a strong opinion about it, I do have pretty strong opinions and am very familiar with the Delphi case. So that should be a much, and I think we very much disagree on the outcome. So I'm really looking forward to be able to have a back and forth friendly discussion with someone who disagrees. And I always feel like those, when we're able to do that, that's why I always try to do it every season. And usually it's hard to get a taker to do it. I always feel like that's the most beneficial to all of you as listeners. If you're really trying to understand all angles of a case, hearing two people have, I don't want to call it a debate, but a discussion about why they disagree, hopefully will be, you know, good for any of you guys that are listening. And Kevin and Anya and myself, and I know Jan's been part of those conversations too. Now we're also hoping that this is a opportunity to try to, I think Kevin, the way Kevin put it was to like turn the temperature down on a lot of the hostilities, because you know I get a lot of their listeners that'll come at me if I'm disagreeing with them and be really shitty to me. I'm sure some of our listeners do the same to them. So I'm hoping that when all the, you know, if anybody that are in those two camps hear like, well, if they can sit down and have a friendly conversation, then maybe I could be a little more friendly with the way I'm interacting online too. We're hoping. So yeah, should be a good conversation. If you're a patron, 2 o'clock on Wednesday, that'll be up, and I'll put up a post ahead of time so you guys will see where that link's at. And if you're not a patron, please become one. You can just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice for $5 a month. You get all of our episodes are ad free. We get a bunch of extra content. You get an hour long pre-show every week. You get video versions of the follow-up, all that kind of cool stuff. So I think that's all. I think that's all the housekeeping stuff.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah. Now, this case, did you end up binging the entire thing? How much did you get through?
I binged the entire thing. The entire
thing. How mad were you at the end?
Furious. Absolutely furious. And I'll tell you what, not only have I binged it, I bet I've shown five people, I've played five different people the ending of episode one, because I didn't want to ruin anything for anybody. But yeah, the part where he's talking about like meeting the devil and like, chills, dude, chills. Like it is amazing. And for any listeners that have not listened, hit pause, go listen to season 5 of Bone Valley. I'm sure that we're going to have some spoilers in this episode, but it's phenomenal. It is phenomenal. I had to binge it. I could not stop listening to it.
Yeah. And definitely will be spoilers, because we're going to kind of go like we did last week too. We'll kind of go through some of the different elements of the case too, because I, you know, my conversation with Paul, yeah, we don't want to give too much away. So there's a lot of like, I thought it was a great conversation, but we really didn't get into any details of the case. Whereas, you know, today, I think for those that haven't listened to it, just like last week, to understand it, because the case is, it's mind boggling.
I want to say something really quick about your conversation with Paul that has zero to do with this case and all to do with your conversation.
I already know what you're going to say.
The male dancer thing?
Yep.
Is that? Yeah. Because you laughed it off and I'm like, hold on. Is that for real? I don't know why I need to know, but I need to know.
So I don't know. It's funny you said that, because as you heard, I just kind of moved on when he said it. And it was like, I was so thrown when he mentioned it that I thought I misheard him. So then when in the office, last week, Erica's in here editing and I was over at my desk and I was like, I think you're coming up on a, like, I think he said that he was a male dancer at some point. She's like, what? And I'm like, I say, I just needed, because I don't know if I was like hearing things. And she got the question. Yep, he definitely said that. He said it right here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know that has nothing to do with anything to do with this case, but I heard it. I heard you move on. And I had a good chuckle to myself. And now I was also like, I need to investigate this. I don't know why, but it's very interesting to me.
The man has lived some life.
He sure has. And I loved him talking about growing up to decide that he needs to bully the bully. Like, Paul seems like such an interesting guy. And he quoted several things throughout the episode of your conversation. Again, not case related, but a lot of different cases that he seems to work on that I did not realize how much he's worked on, which was really, really neat to hear.
Yeah, he's got a list a mile long of awards that he's won as an investigative journalist and primarily focusing on wrongful convictions. And by the way, just so we're clear, did a quick little Google search, and Paul has written a memoir called The Body Shop, where he recounts his own tortured relationship with steroids and weightlifting. And so, yeah, he was like, he threw that out there and I was like, wait, what? But yeah, so yeah, he's written a memoir about it.
Okay. So now that we took that way off in the weeds, we could probably get back to talking about this, but no, it was really cool. I didn't realize that he was, you know, I obviously he's a journalist and this was a fascinating case and the way he covered it was phenomenal. The way he wrote it was phenomenal. I just didn't realize that he was so well published when it comes to this. I think that's really neat.
Yeah. And dude, what I liked about it, I mean, I've talked to a lot of really, really good journalists, but he's like listening to the episode and then talking to him about it, both on the air and off the air. We talked quite a bit. He's just so bold.
Yeah.
And just doesn't like the conversation. Well, you listen to the whole thing, like in the conversation at the end, when he's talking to that Howard Gombert, the one who they think is the actual responsible, like, it was like, he is not dancing around this at all. He is going at this guy.
At all. And even, I mean, he brought up like one case after another that he knew about and then threw in the case in question that we're talking about in the case that will be season two of The Devil's Quarry, which is also very fascinating that he's doing a second season.
And such a quick turnaround.
A very quick turnaround. Very quick turnaround. Man, this case is the strangest case. I know he talks about in the episode, but just the idea that they honed into these two boys, Anthony and Andy, the way that they did and leaned into them so hard is just, I mean, for lack of a better word, like flabbergasting.
It doesn't make any sense. So I guess for anybody that hasn't listened to it and is looking, so the case itself is, you know, Josette Wright was, you know, 12 years old. She disappeared in Carmel, New York, October 3rd, 1994. In the season opens with there were some hunters that like found her remains in the woods. And the investigation like really quickly starts focusing on Anthony and Andy. They end up getting Andy. Now, again, I'm always having the problem where I'm blending cases, but they got Andy to basically give a false confession, right, is how they ended up getting him.
It sounds like they got Andy to give a false confession, and then there was another female that was part of this that was supposedly in the van with them and gave a whole confession on top of that, saying that these two were involved. She was afraid. They brutally sexually assaulted her, and then they took her out of the van. And that was the last she knew about it. And that was the major selling point going forward for the police, was her testimony, I believe.
Yeah. And she ultimately recanted, and it wasn't hers. I don't want to mix this up with Beth's season. It was season four, but she had changed her story several times. Right. And weren't they?
I don't think she's ever recanted. I think that was a big, like, I think they continued to lean on her over and over again through the multiple retrials when they would give him another. And even there's an interview where she's like, you know, you're not telling me, I saw it, I was there. And maybe, yeah. I don't remember her recanting it, but maybe she did.
Maybe not.
Here's the problem with this case. This case was absolutely fascinating. There were 75 players in this case when it comes down to it. And I can't remember all the names and who did what when it comes into it.
Yeah. Well, and my problem is I just went through, because there was, it was Yolanda. The one I'm thinking of was Yolanda from season four.
Yes.
Of Bone Valley.
Yes.
That she recanted.
Correct. So I believe this woman's name is Melissa. I don't want to throw names out there that I'm not confident on, but I believe that was it. She was the one, and she always stood by hers, but there was a lot of things that didn't make sense. There was a lot of, you know, there was the idea that the van didn't work.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, yeah. Like, her story was impossible. Like, it was provably false. What it was. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so they focus on these guys. Okay, so DePippo went to trial second time spring of 2012, and Wilson again recant. Yeah, so she did recant.
Okay.
And McGregor also recanted the testimony he gave the first trial that he was present in the van with Kurvec and DePippo. Okay, yeah, or at least two people recanted. But anyway, so going on with it, they end up, the story that was given by this other witness was provably false. One of the things I do recall was that the van itself, like the van wasn't even operational at the time. Right. And that was provable that the van couldn't even be driven at the time that she said that she was in it. But they go after these guys, and no matter what they find, they go after them anyway. And then this investigation starts leading to, she had contact with this guy, Howard Gombert, and he was one of the last people to see them. And they start looking into this Howard Gombert's past, and he's got all these, there was, you know, his, from his ex-wife and her daughter. And there was like sexual assaults on both of them, and just one person after another. And then they start looking into another missing girl that the last person she was with was him. And then it was the stepdaughter, right? There are the girlfriend's daughter, wife's daughter, who
originally brought forth the charges against him.
Put him in prison for the 30 years or whatever.
Yes. But no, that was, I think that was a different case. I think that was one of they went back and found another girl that was younger. The girlfriend's daughter is the one that brought charges against him, and then they would not let her testify via video, and they made testify via court, like directly in front of him, and you know, she just couldn't handle it and she left, and they ended up acquitting him of those charges. Right. And they eventually got back with another case, but the dude is a monster.
And both of those women gave their account of what he did to them. And they were like striking, the MOs were strikingly similar. And there was a very specific element. It was was it like a bra or something that was like put into their mouth?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And so with both of them, he's assaulted both of them. He gets convicted of one of them, gets sent to prison. His ex-girlfriend talks about, you know, him assaulting her brutally and doing the same thing. So the same guy is in the same thing with the same MO. And then the victim in this case, Josette Wright, when they found her, she was found like with the same her bra was in her mouth. It was like the exact same MO of what he did to confirm to have done to these other victims prior to that. And then we find out that, you know, he was the last person to be seen with her before she went missing. So
the last sighting of Josette was seen talking to a man and getting in a car, a red sports car with Connecticut license plates. And then you learn that his current girlfriend has a red sports car with Connecticut license plates. So that's kind of where they tie it to him. But what you do find out is he knew her. He already had contact with her via another woman. I mean, he really actually knew this woman. This wasn't just happenstance that this girl showed up at the right time. Like,
the one girl had said that it was the girlfriend's daughter, right? That when she finally, after the assaults, had like left and fled and got away from him. Yeah. And he told her that he was going to then have to move on to Josette. And he was like, basically threatened her that he was going to start assaulting Josette if she left. And didn't he take her as a babysitter?
That's how he said he was going to do it, was to take her as a babysitter.
Yeah, as a replacement babysitter for him. So like, there was all this evidence. I don't remember. I know you just listened to it much more recent than I did, because I did like 2 weeks ago before I interviewed Paul. The basis of the acquittal, his conviction getting overturned, was that they found out that there was all this evidence against that Howard Gombert wasn't that what ended up being the similarities in MO in these other cases was able to be presented to the appeals court.
And it wasn't just that they were able to present it as like a third party culpability. It was that they were able to present that law enforcement knew all of this and chose to ignore it rather than total third card. You know, instead of just completely saying it's Gombert, look at this, you know, and pushing it as a third party, they were able to prove that the police had all the information about Gombert and chose to ignore it.
Yeah, and that's what they found when you see that distinct shift in Paul throughout the season when he starts getting really pissed is when he finds out that it wasn't like they just missed Howard Gombert. They had him as a suspect. They had in the police file that the report of the car she was last seen getting into. They knew that that was the car that he was driving. Mm-hmm. They knew about his previous assault charges with these other girls,
yep.
And, you know, and that the MO match. So they had all this information about him and chose to ignore and suppress all of that in order to go after Anthony and Andy to convict them. Hey, everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
I want to say, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but there was I don't know if it was the woman, the girl's mother or somebody that was reliant to that, but literally said, like, as soon as the girl turned up deceased, she literally said, oh, like Howard killed her, like immediately said it.
Yeah.
So like, yeah. It was from,
and she said it to the police.
Yes. From the get-go.
Yeah. Yeah. She called the police right away and told them like it was Howard Gombert.
Yes. Which is wild. And they just completely ignored it. Completely ignored it. And Paul, holy shit. You said it in your episode with him. You said it to me personally, but Paul is a motherfucker. Like,
I don't know how else to describe him. He's a man.
Yeah, the way he claws into this case is amazing. And the things he was able to find and the people he was able to talk to and just to scratch and claw through this case and continue to fight is amazing.
Well, and his personal involvement was what I like about it too. Like he wasn't just doing a story because, you know, once Anthony got out of prison, mm-hmm. You know, and he's out, then Anthony won a huge lawsuit, millions of dollars. and Anthony was trying to investigate stuff. And finally, Anthony is just like had to like just move. He couldn't take it any further. He's moving on. And then there was that like distinct shift where Paul's like, so I'm taking it because Howard Gombert's about to be a free man. He's about to get out of prison.
Right.
From that previous assault. And then there was, you know, there was another murder, another young girl that disappeared. I don't remember if they found her body yet or not, or if.
I don't believe they ever found her body because I think that
she's just
is
missing.
She's missing and presumed deceased. But I think that's one of the questions that Paul asked him. You know, he asked about, did this person, you know, why did you do this? Did this person, mm-hmm. you know, why did you kill Josette? And he says, obviously he didn't. Then he says, where is, I believe the girl's name is Robin. I can't remember her last name, but yeah. Like, where is she? We know you did it. Where is she?
Yeah. And he just pushes out. So yeah, there was, you know, there besides Josette's case, which is now an open case.
Yes.
Because the conviction, well, I wonder how that works because Anthony has been, his conviction was overturned, but Andy has not, right? His conviction still stands. I know I asked him that towards the end of the episode because by the end of the production of season 5, Andy was still in prison and was waiting on his post-conviction case. So maybe it's not, I guess it wouldn't be fully open yet, but Paul or Howard could still be charged with that. But yeah, then there's this other case. And from what Paul told me, that's why they're jumping right back into the next season is because they want to complete their investigation before he walks out of prison. Because, you know, I think Paul said he's like a ticking time bomb. And
right.
He is just offended over and over and over and over again.
Well, and I didn't realize, and it makes perfect sense too, but, and I can't remember exactly how he explained it, but he said essentially the DA can't, or not the DA, but the oh my goodness, Zachary. Like the state attorney general can keep him in prison based on that he's a threat to society. Regardless of his his term is over, he can be held. And I know that's what they're really pushing for until they can get any information out there.
Right. Yeah, because there's, like I said, there's Josette's case. And so this sounds like season 6, which is going to start next month, is going to start off like going into the case of the other missing girl, which again, the last person known to have been with her was Howard Gombert. I mean, there's way too many coincidences for this guy to be skating through life the way that he is. I mean, he is an absolute despicable monster. And so he's going to dig into that. They're circling back to Josette's case. And we definitely have that to look forward to in season 6, which is season 2 of The Devil's Quarry. But yeah, so I mean that's the case, and we've only got a couple. I don't want to drag this out farther than we need to without it, because there weren't a whole lot of questions from listeners. The biggest thing I want to do is just try to get people to go listen to this case. Like the more people that are listening and are getting involved in the case, the more people, the more of a chance we have of finding the evidence necessary to keep this man in prison and hopefully find Robin's body. Cause I think that was the big thing is that she's missing. No one knows where she's at. Cause that now that it's coming back to me now, I should point out, I know this seems very unprepared. It is. I was out traveling all day and slid back into the office like 15 minutes before we started here. So I'm like trying to catch up my brain while we're in real time. There's your real time for you. Well, but yeah, so, I don't want to just keep rambling so on. And I just, yeah, go ahead.
Jump in here, and listener Sarah said that she loved the context that Paul gave for the background of the area. At first, I was wondering if I missed something, but then he brought it all back around to the case. And it was, he really described that area really well and the reasons to why parts of this case happened, which was really, I mean, phenomenal the way he put it together.
Yeah. Erica had mentioned the same thing when she was editing. She's like, what is he talking about? He's talking about this lake and pollution. Like, what's going on? And I'm like, it comes around.
Yeah, you know, he's getting there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Listener Kathy also says this is a very interesting and infuriating case. I ended up binging the series. It boggles my mind that they could have a great suspect and totally ignore him and go after two innocent people, and that Paul definitely has a voice for storytelling. And I will add the caveat to on the end that not only does he have the voice for storytelling, he is a phenomenal writer that makes it interesting as well.
Yeah. And that voice too. Maya also commented, I just want to say that I completely agree with you, Bob. I think Paul could make an old-fashioned phone book sound exhilarating with that voice. Yeah. And yeah. I agree. Yeah. His voice. I mean, this is one you just doubt you've got to go listen to. And yeah. And I'm with you, Kathy, the whole case just dumbfounds me because I've seen many cases where police hone in on somebody. Many of the cases we've covered on this podcast, because they just want to close the case, find anybody, close the case. We don't care. You know, find somebody that's the police think is a throwaway person, throw them in prison, wipe their hands of it, and that's it. This one, it's like they could have closed. There was so much evidence,
right,
pointing towards Howard Gombert. Like, I genuinely don't understand. Like, you didn't have to jump through all these hoops to convict these two innocent people. You had the guilty person sitting right in front of you.
Right. They willfully chose to go after these two boys instead of somebody that was a better suspect. I mean, they purposely, willfully had to ignore what was in front of them.
Yeah, I don't understand it. So with that being said, like I said, I feel like I'm rambling. I feel, to be very transparent, I feel very unprepared for this follow-up right now because I'm like, my brain is like wrestling with all the other, I've been researching the new case for the next season. Mm-hmm. Plus I've talked to, you know, Beth and talked to Paul, and I'm touching back up on all the Delphi stuff because I got that tomorrow. And like, my brain is like right now, just, I thought I was in good shape, but I'm mashing all that shit together in my head all at the same time. So we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up for now. Next week's follow-up will be much more on point because we're talking about a case that I'm very familiar with. Zach is very familiar with. Janet is very familiar with. And my two guests that will be on Sunday's episode, which if you're a patron, you can listen live on Wednesday. If you're here this Friday, you missed it. Kevin and Anya from The Murder Sheet. So we've had Bob Mata and Andrea Burghardt both on, and Bob on several times, going in depth about what they saw at trial. And they're both attorneys, obviously, talking about how they see the case. So now we're going to have kind of the other side come on from the Murder Sheet. We have Kevin and Anya. Kevin is also an attorney. Kevin and Anya both believe that Richard Allen is very clearly guilty. I have not read it, but they have written a book on the topic along with covering on their podcast. So should be an interesting conversation. I'll be talking to them. So you'll hear that main episode on Sunday. And then I'm hoping it'll be all three of us back together again to do the follow-up next week. So until then, we will talk to you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.